women that don't read comics, and you're making the face of your whole company and your whole franchise a woman?
What's up, folks? I'm Karima, also known as the Blur Girl, and this is the Blur Girl Podcast. Now, if you're new here, welcome. I love talking about comics and geekdom, and I interview folks that are fans or have contributed to the genre in some way. Please take a moment to subscribe so that you don't miss any updates, and I now have a newsletter. So aren't you proud of me? You can now sign up over at theblurgirl.com. It's all the way up at the top of the page there in that orange band. Just sign up and every week you'll be able to find out exactly what I'm up to, where I'll be next, and everything. Because I keep getting, you know, hits like, oh, I didn't know you were going to be there. I didn't know what was going on. I'm trying to put all that stuff in the newsletter so you guys can keep up. Now, today I'm going to be talking to Sebastian A. Jones of Stranger Comics. Now, if you haven't noticed, there are a lot of remakes and adaptations being made right now, from comic books to video games to fantasy stories to anime. Hollywood has decided that instead of getting folks to write brand new stories, I guess, they'll just adapt old ones that are already out there. Now, is this an effort to try and harness existing audiences? Probably. Don't know if it's going to work, though. In this age of streaming media where binge watching a show for 4 hours straight by yourself is almost more popular than live tweeting your favorite weekly show. Shout out to Game of Thrones. I am going to be watching that weekly. Studios have really become more interested in putting money behind complete storylines. And there's really no place better to find that than graphic novels and anime. That's what has me so excited about today's guest. In this exclusive interview, Sebastian A. Jones, the creator of the comic book Niobe, which he co-created with actress and activist Amon Le Stenberg, he shares with me the world of Asunda and how he has just signed a deal with HBO to turn his comic book universe into a series. This is an exclusive interview. Sebastian has not spoken to anybody else about this since he signed the deal. So I'm kind of excited about this. You do not want to miss this episode. But first, let's pay some bills. Now, most of you know how insanely busy I am, and I have so much to read for my column, interviews, and reviews that I sometimes miss out on really great stories or books that friends recommend me. That's where Audible comes in. In addition to listening to podcasts, I also listen to Audible.com for a lot of really great books out right now. If you're interested in starting your free Audible trial, go to audibletrial.com/theblurredgirl for a free trial and start listening right away. And what's great is many books have full productions behind them, like scripted podcasts these days. For instance, I know Good Omens by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett is coming to the BBC soon, and I read it years ago, but I wanted a little refresher. Well, it turns out there's a dramatic audiobook reading starring Mark Heap and Peter Serafinowicz. He's the guy who played Garthon Saul in Guardians of the Galaxy, and they are hysterical. Check out the book yourself by starting your very own free trial by going to audibletrial.com/theblurredgirl. That's audibletrial.com/theblurredgirl. T-H-E-B-L-E-R-D-G-U-R-L. Now back to the show. Now let's get into some of the geek news this week in case you've been inundated and haven't been able to keep up. And then we will get to talk to Sebastian. Now, in case you've been living under a rock, you know that Marvel's part two of Avengers Infinity War, Avengers Endgame, drops on April 26th. There's been a ton of fan theories and thoughts on how the characters are going to be brought back into the MCU, if they're going to be brought back, who's going to be brought back. Now, we know some of them are definitely coming back because although Peter Parker, Spider-Man, died in Infinity War or was snapped out of existence, We've already seen the teaser trailers for Spider-Man Far From Home, and he's clearly alive. So unless that movie is supposed to take place before Infinity War, Peter's coming back. And Ryan Coogler, the director of Black Panther, has started pre-production on Black Panther 2. So although T'Challa got caught up in the snapshot in Infinity War, we're pretty sure he's going to be back in Black Panther 2. Although me personally, I really want Shuri to become Black Panther like she did in several iterations of the comics, but she might have been snapped out of existence as well because we've sort of seen her face on the screen of The Missing in several trailers for Endgame. Now listen, there have been like 21 movies, so if you're confused at all by the MCU and are trying to get caught up before Endgame drops, I suggest that you check out a podcast series that I guested on recently over at Sci-Fi Wire called 22 Days of Marvel. They've created one podcast for every movie made in the MCU from Iron Man to Infinity War and break it down for you. So that's like 21 podcasts. I guess they're going to do a 22nd one after Endgame drops. I'm guesting on Thor the Dark World, Avengers Age of Ultron, and Black Panther. And you can listen to those anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast. But don't go yet. Don't go listen yet, because there's more on this podcast for you to listen to. Now, the other announcement that came out recently is the fact that N.K. Jemisin, the three-time winner of the Hugo Award for Best Novel, for those of you who don't know what the Hugo Awards are, they are like the Oscars of literary awards for science fiction. It's basically a set of awards given annually to the best science fiction or fantasy works and achievements of the previous year. So N.K. Jemisin has won 3 years in a row for her trilogy, The Broken Earth series. It's just been announced that she's coming to DC Comics with a new Green Lantern project. It's now this is drawn by Jamal Campbell, who Jamal has been quietly drawing his ass off for years at Marvel and DC. I'm personally a fan of his indie project, The Immortal Nadia Green, but he's also drawing Naomi for Brian Michael Bendis and David Walker right now over at DC. Jamal released this cover recently, the cover image of the comic he's doing with NK, and I was blown away, like I usually am with his work. But what's amazing about this next Green Lantern is that it's a sister. Yes, it is a black woman named Sojourner Jo Mullen. It might be Mullen. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. She is the sole protector of the city of Enduring, a metropolis of 20 billion people. Don't know what planet this is on. Don't know where in the universe we are, but she is their Green Lantern protector. And because the Green Lantern Corps is made up of thousands, possibly millions of people, I've been saying for years, I don't know why we can't have a black woman Green Lantern. I mean, we have a Latina, and honestly, Jon Stewart, there needs to be a live action Jon Stewart, Idris Elba, if anybody's listening, as soon as possible. Honestly, you know what? Sterling K. Brown could play him too. Anyway, back to this book. The comic will be called, it'll be part of a series called Far Sector, and the comic's going to be coming out on the Young Animal imprint of DC. That's sort of their YA imprint. And it's funny because Young Animal is being revived by Gerard Way. Now, some of you will recognize him from Umbrella Academy. He created that comic over at Dark Horse with Gabriel Ba and is the executive producer of the current live action adaptation of Umbrella Academy over on Netflix. Bit of trivia, he also used to be the front man for the band My Chemical Romance in the 90s. So yeah, Gerard stays busy. Now, staying in the indie comic side of things, there are several announcements that came out that I'm excited about. Bitterroot, which is a comic created by David Walker and Sanford Green, the team that gave us Power Man and Iron Fist a couple years ago, along with Chuck Brown, have had their comic run picked up by Legendary Pictures. Now, I don't know the details of this deal as of yet, but Bitterroot could absolutely be the show that Mario Van Peebles' Superstition failed to be. If you've never heard of that show, look it up. It debuted on Sci-Fi late last year and then disappeared just as quickly. Bitterroot actually, unlike Superstition, which takes place in New Orleans, Bitterroot actually takes place in Harlem during the Renaissance and centers around a family of monster hunters. And they fight everybody, monsters, demons, vampires. But the interesting thing about it is the monsters are actually demonic personifications of things like hatred and bigotry and things like that. So the more hate there is in the world, the more these demons feed on and can basically transform people. It's drawn beautifully by Sanford, and for those of you who love his work, it's definitely worth checking out. Now, two more indie comic adaptations coming our way are Bloodshot from Valiant Comics, which actually stars Vin Diesel in the title role. It's been cast. They've started shooting. In fact, he actually posted an image of himself as the immortal hero on his Instagram page. Now, for those of you who aren't familiar, Bloodshot is like a cross between the Winter Soldier and Wolverine. He's genetically enhanced with nanites that have been shot into his bloodstream. Get it? Bloodshot? That help him, the nanites help him regenerate and heal from anything. Like, I've seen this guy get parts of him blown off and grow them back. He's been shot in the head, everything. And he won't die. He's also had his memory wiped dozens of times. I'm not sure which arc they're going with for the movie, but hopefully we'll get a trailer soon and that'll sort that out. Bloodshot will drop in February of 2020. Then there's Crowded, the comic. This is an indie comic that came out last year, written by Chris Sabella, about an obnoxious social media influencer and her bodyguard for hire who are fighting off a crowd-funded assassination attempt on her life. Now, it's hysterical. Like, just as crazy as it sounds, the dialogue Chris Sabella writes, such realistic dialogue that you find yourself kind of talking along with the characters. That comic or that series got snapped up by Rebel Wilson almost immediately. In fact, I had a chance to talk to Chris Sabella about it over on my column on sci-fi.com, so totally check that out. And the comic book is really a fun ride, and you should absolutely check that out. The first trade is out now. Pick it up on your next comic book trip, okay? That's Crowded. And the final indie comic book adaptation that I wanted to mention is actually not just the adaptation of one comic, but an entire universe. And that is also tying into our interviewee today. That universe is called Asunda, and it's from Stranger Comics. Now, Stranger Comics was started by Sebastian A. Jones about 10 years ago. He seemed to come out of nowhere with a comic that he co-created with actress Amanda Stenberg called Niobe, She Is Life. But that comic wasn't the first in his series or in this expansive universe that he created. In fact, the Asunda universe spans many books, including The Untamed, which is actually a prequel to Niobe, Niobe, Dusu, and Arathune. And there's one more that I can't remember the name of. I'm going to have to check with Sebastian about that. But he has written just about all of the stories, or co-written them at least, because this is all coming from his head. And he's working with a various group of really talented artists to bring them to life, like Ashley A. Woods, who worked on Niobe, James Webster, who's drawn Dusu for him. But recently, HBO announced that they were adapting the world of Asunda for HBO, which is actually kind of brilliant since Game of Thrones is ending, and this is just an involved type of universe. I spoke to Sebastian about what his journey has been like in this interview. And we also talk about how he managed to sign this deal and keep complete creative control over his work, which is so hard to do these days. That's why we end up with so many bad adaptations of things. But I don't think we're going to have that problem. I don't think we're going to have that problem with Asunda. We also talk about what it's like growing up of mixed heritage, what it's like growing up sort of racially ambiguous, and how that translated for him here in America, and why he's so committed to tell stories by and for marginalized voices through his work. So after this next break, check out my interview with Sebastian A. Jones of Stranger Comics. Do you run a hosted website on WordPress, or is your site really slow? Have you gotten hacked in the past and you just didn't know what to do? Well, if so, you need SiteGround. Now, I am a SiteGround affiliate. I'm also a customer. In fact, I switched theblurredgirl.com over to them and never looked back. In fact, I've put other people onto them for two reasons: reliability and customer service. You can try it yourself at siteground.com/go/theblurredgirl. That's siteground.com/go/theblurredgirl. Now, unlike some other hosting sites that have a really great affiliate program and seem to be really popular, many of them don't have customer service. SiteGround has great customer service. They don't talk to you like an idiot. If you can't find something, they'll help you work through it. They have a really easy control panel, and SiteGround is really the truth. You can start hosting your site today for as low as $3.95 a month. You can run a store, a blog, anything really. And they can even move your whole existing site over for you from another hosting service, and you don't have to worry about a bunch of code and stuff. So if you've been blogging or running a website for while now, it's time to take your site and its security seriously and move up to SiteGround. Sign up today at siteground.com/go/theblurredgirl. Sebastian, thank you for joining me, and congrats on the HBO deal for Asunda. I talked to you actually a year ago. I was just looking when I talked to you for sci-fi, it was literally like March 18th or something. So just a little over a year ago. We were talking about, oh, it would be great if I have so many plans
wow,
for.
That's crazy.
So congratulations.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah, it's been a long road and, you know, bumpy at times and curvy at times and, you know, little side roads here and there. And thank you for just always being just so incredibly supportive since the get-go, since we kind of, you know, peeked our head out and said hello to the world.
From the beginning, it just, well, first of all, it was a quality, it's a quality product. I mean, the comic and the world of Asunda are fantastic. Now, let's break that down for the people who don't know. Like, you,
sure.
Let's see, was it 2014 Niobe dropped?
Yeah, no, 2015. So basically, we started Stranger Comics, funnily enough, back in,
okay.
We formed the company back in around 2007, 2008 maybe. And what a lot of folks might not realize is I'd started creating the world of Asunda when I was a boy, so a teenager. Like, so the world's early incarnation in my brain was 30 years ago. And I'd kind of created this character, Niobe, to kind of reflect my own, my own journey, my own inhibitions and ambitions, and vulnerabilities and wrath as a young mixed chap growing up in England. And the whole kind of goal while I was creating the world was to kind of create a world around Niobe that she could make this fantasy world in my mind a better place. And as I grew, she kind of grew with me. Now, over the years, all that was to start with was playing, you know, tabletop role-playing games and live-action role-playing games within this world that I was continuing to grow. And I used to run a record label, putting out historical blues and jazz. And as I wound that label down, myself and a couple of guys, Daryl and Josh and Chris and so on, we, you know, it was just this idea of how can we take this world that we were playing in into another medium, which was comic books and publishing. And how is the best way to introduce this character, Niobe? And so the first character, the first story for Niobe is this book called The Untamed, A Sinner's Prayer. That's where we first meet her.
Yeah, and that's the one that you teamed up with Amanda on, right? Amanda Sandberg?
No, that is funny, actually. A lot of folks think that's the first one I did. I teamed up with an artist out of Sweden who had worked on like Harry Potter covers, Lord of the Rings covers. And that took close to a decade to paint.
Wow.
And it took place. The story, ironically, only takes place over 7 days. There are seven issues for 7 days. And this guy, it's this kind of vengeance to redemption story. And Niobe kind of acts as our hero's conscience. What we don't realize is we're planting a seed that she is actually going to be the Luke Skywalker-y messiah of the whole world. So it's a very simple vengeance to redemption story. We plant the seeds of Niobe and who she is and who she can become. So as that was coming to a close and we were finishing that and getting ready to put it out, I met Amandla, and I knew when it came to writing Niobe's own story, even though I'm mixed, I needed a young black teenage girl to help me write her story and lend an authentic voice to who she is. Even, you know, because it just felt like the most authentic and nuances I might miss and certain things I just knew for that age group was so important. And Amanda was at that age as well. She was, you know, I think she was 15. We first started talking together.
That's fantastic that you were able to get her voice and get her involved. I mean, was that difficult? Was it a lot of like red tape and contracts and stuff like that?
We just clicked. No, yeah, we just clicked. It was easy. I met her at a festival for kids' books that I was putting out, and And I saw her there, and I ran up to her like a, screaming fan and said, look, I'm like, oh my God, you got to be Niobe. You got to work. Like crazy person. And I said, come and listen, I'm going to do a big reading with my kid's book. And she was there with her mom, Karen, and they came to this reading that I was doing that at that time. And I think they were the only people in the whole audience. So there was like, so it was actually quite comical. So I did this reading to her and her mom for my kid's book. And she's like, you're really funny. So what's this project about? And next thing you know, we're having a cup of tea and just telling her about Niobe and the world. And she read The Untamed and became, I guess, thank goodness, hooked into our world. And there was a lot of, you talk about zeitgeist, serendipity, the spirit, moments in time which are meant to be. And I think a lot of what I had planned for Niobe's journey at that age reflected a lot of Amandla's own journey at that time. So, we were like two peas in a pod, and it was a wonderful experience. So
that's fantastic.
So it was just a great collaboration, and we broke story together for She Is Life, the first in the Niobe solo title.
And kudos to you, because there's so many people who, it's funny, right, for what I call the other, meaning it could be a woman or somebody who is a different sexual orientation, gender, class, sure, whatever. And there's so many people who are like, oh, we have all these diverse books and these diverse things, but they actually don't know any diverse people. So they don't, the voice comes out wrong. The art is beautiful, but the voice comes out wrong. So kudos to you for actually, even before you knew it was going to be Amandla, kudos to you for actually realizing, like, let me get a black young woman's perspective on this.
Yeah, before Amandla, before Amandla, funny enough, I was, I would meet the odd person, and it would be always close to kind of moving forward, but usually the parents would get a little bit nervous because of the fantastical themes.
Yeah.
And, some folks were a little, on the religious tip. So it made them very nervous. And I get it. No harm, no foul. And so it's like, goodness gracious, maybe, and I hit these points where I'm like, maybe I just need to just move forward and get on with it. But it was just the right moment in time. And then we met Ashley A. Woods at a festival called the Black Comics Arts Festival. And Amandla loved her artwork.
Okay, and that was and Ashley was your first artist.
The Niobe book.
Okay.
A little bit of fun fact is, Amandla and I were first going to do it as a novel. We just found that with her schedule and my schedule, it was just bonkers. And I was like, well, we are doing comics as well, so let's do that. And she was in love with Ashley's art, and we had a couple of artists send in some tests, and it was such a dramatic departure from kind of the heavy painted style of The Untamed. This was very whimsical and bright and hopeful. Ashley's lines were super clean and could convey so much expression with effortless line work that the contrast was like, wow, I didn't see that coming. And the stories that Amandla and I were coming up with. And then also, a guy that doesn't get enough credit is my CCO, Daryl May, who's been with me since the get-go. And he does all of the layouts and storyboards for everything that we do.
Mm-hmm.
So that allows us with all of our comics to have as different as the books look when they're finished, with art styles and artist interpretations, there is still an undercurrent of a cinematic quality.
There's a cinematic continuity there.
Continuity,
yeah.
Exactly. So it feels like, ooh, yeah, that's an Asunder book. That's a Stranger Comics book.
One of the things that was interesting, though, it was the Untamed first, then Niobe, mm-hmm. She Is Life, which is where we saw the both Ashley's covers, and I know you had some...
Hyung does a lot of Yes, Young's covers you probably mm-hmm. recognize. And I'm sorry to cut you off.
No.
I think that's where you're going.
Yeah.
Is that kind of painterly paint covery, the painted covers? That's a buddy of mine I met before I even started Stranger Comics, I think, through another friend of mine called Scoot, who is an actor in True Detective to Argo to 12 Years a Slave. And it's just super random anyway. So he was working on a short film. He introduced me to this concept artist out of San Francisco, who was still at school. And Hyung is now a massive video game concept artist for Naughty Dog, working on projects like The Last of Us to Uncharted 4.
Wow.
And yeah, and that's why, and Hyung is one of those masters that manages to evoke emotion. I mean, I think that's capture the, you know, he captured Amanda's essence and likeness so well.
Yeah, and the covers. With her face. And that's why everybody was like, oh, you know, and it was perfect the way it came out and the way she was also involved with it and also made herself available. I mean, I saw her at events with you with the comic in so many places. Yeah. I thought that was wonderful. When did you know that, okay, I have this entire world I'm building? Because I guess the thing for me was so fascinating about the way you grew this business is that every single book seemed to relate to every other book. It wasn't like other people who, like, we're going to put this out, we're going to see what it does, and then we're going to do the next one and see what that one does. Everything seemed very purposeful. Did you know, was your whole goal to build a world and then sell it all to HBO and become like this big mogul person?
Yeah. I always, my goal is always to become the big mogul person. Absolutely. No. I think the goal a long time ago was always to, you know, be the Marvel universe of fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, in the early days, you know, there were some investors that wanted to, you know, partner up and invest. And, you know, that's great. But sometimes that gets nerve wracking because you're also super protective of the integrity of the vision. And, you know, also back then it was, you know, it was, some folks were like, well, wait, you know, this is back in 2007. Women, they don't read comics, and you're making the face of your whole company and your whole franchise a woman, a girl.
And people actually said this to you?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Wow.
And then, oh, but, you know, black people don't read comics, or there's not enough black people reading comics to support the comics, and then white people don't buy black comics. And above all that, they don't read fantasy comics. Fantasy at the time was still before, you know,
Lord of the Rings.
I mean, Lord of the Rings had come out, but it was still a bit of four letter word. You know, the Game of Thrones hadn't come out, The Hobbit hadn't come out.
And all of these things had actually started in prose. Like Lord of the Rings started in prose. It wasn't a comic book until after the movie.
Course.
So, and even Harry Potter was prose first. So yeah, I can see how they might think that.
But the comic space and the comic retailers, and you got to respect them because they've got, you know, families and they've got mortgages and they've got to fill out, you know, they've got to move what sells in their stores. Are they going to take a risk on fantasy comics, you know, in quotes, you know, multicultural comics, for sure, black comics, with female leads? And I was like, yeah, I'm going to do all three. And, you know, we're going to try and grow a rose in a desert. And as long as we're true with our mission of authentic representation, and on top of that, the stories have to resonate on a deep, soulful level. Like The Untamed is really a father and daughter story, and a man wanting to be a better father, and does he get a second chance? And this little girl gives him the opportunity to be a better father and be that second chance. So for me, what I wanted to steer clear from was the usual tropes and fantasies that we'd seen, whether it's grand soap operas to, you know, we're off to save the princess, we're going from one part of the world to the other. Yeah, I wanted to do each story in a localized environment and then ground it in characters that reflect our own kind of moral dilemmas and, you know, make those you know, make those stories kind of almost claustrophobic, like you're in it, and mm-hmm. what would you do? And even the Niobe, she's life story, it is that she does feel out of place. It's a story about a girl, essentially, a mixed girl, returning to her ancestors to find her faith, because she's rejected elsewhere. And is she still rejected even by her ancestors? Is she not pure enough? But she does find herself within that space. And I think those are things just any teenager can relate to. Oh, I don't, you know, any person who feels
like
out of
place, they don't feel like they fit in.
Exactly. So that's the heart of Niobe Shear's life, in and around a kind of a Beauty and the Beast love story with murder and mystery. But the heart of it is, where do you fit in? And the other story that we came out with was a story called Dusu, Path of the Ancient. And that was very much in that kind of that Tarzan, the Jungle Book, this Last Samurai, Last of the Mohicans, this man out of place.
Mm-hmm.
But what always galled me was it was always the white dude out of place and becomes a savior of the brown or the blacks or the natives or whatever. And I always thought that was just some bullshit. So for me, I wanted to
white
create...
White is always a white savior or a male savior.
Yep. I wanted to create a very unapologetically raw and vulnerable but strong three-dimensional black hero in Dusu.
The interesting thing about Dusu is that it ties into Niobe's story so interestingly, because I remember thinking, like, I don't understand how this is beautiful, but I don't understand how it ties in. And then it dawned on me, oh my God, these are her people. She just doesn't know it yet.
Yes.
And it's fantastic how you wove that together.
Thank you. Yeah. And it wasn't easy because you're dealing with a lot of moving parts, a lot of artists, you know, people's time frames. My wallet isn't, I'm not a big company.
Let's talk about that real quick. Cause I know you had a couple of Kickstarters. Was Kickstarter the way you funded most of this, or were you able to take the sales? Was it just taking the money from the profits and just pouring it right back into the company?
It's all of the above. Mm. You know, people ask me what's the hardest thing about doing a comic book company or being independent or whatever is you're literally, okay, I'm going to take money from my family and how I can support them, and I'm going to put it into my vision, and they have to be on board with that. And if they're not, where's the rub? I risk everything, my credit cards, my, you know, borrowing to Kickstarter, to you name it. You know, I won't give me too many horror stories, but it's been extremely scary. Like unbelievably scary.
Well, you pull it off very well because you always look so calm at these conventions and always look so laid back.
Thank you. I hide and then collapse.
I was going to say, I'll have what you're having because you seem very calm.
Yeah, it's all lies.
So,
comic convention sales to part-time, you know, writing gigs to part-time producing gigs to you know, teaching I do to whatever, to Kickstarters, and me and the guys really not taking giant salaries. Just we literally pour everything. And now and again, some guys coming along the way to really, really be incredibly supportive and prop us up. So I have two chaps that have done that, which has been massively, massively helpful, and my mom
as well. So like
investors
that have like angel investors, but on the friend level.
Exactly. Yeah, it's crazy because I still drive the same car since 2005. You know, it's just we throw everything at it.
But you're lucky to have that support team, because I talk to a lot of artists who don't have that support. You put one trade out a year, but you do hit issues, or are you not doing the single issues anymore?
We do, but it's very difficult if you don't get the comic issues done on Diamond's
time schedule. Yeah.
You know, or you think you're getting the issue and it just doesn't come in time for whatever reason. And then there's a penalty. So from now on, I'm just making sure all my issues are banked before I even release single issues in stores. Because then it's unfair to the fans, the retailers, the pressure on the artists, the pressure on distributor, the pressure on me, the stress, the finance, it's just too much. So, and, you know, so I'm now banking issues. And so my goal is to put out, like, if I can do two trades a year, maybe three, as we ramp up with our new deal and one kid's book a year, then we're in good shape, because Dusu and the Untamed took a long time to make. You know, with our books, we wanted to kind of come out with that left hook you didn't see coming, like, where in the hell did these guys come from?
In this world of basically streaming everything and binge watching everything, do you find that it's easier to sell the trades at like conventions than it is to put the marketing and energy into pushing out the single issues?
Yeah, it's a combo, I think, really, because when we're at the conventions, we know how to pitch, we know how to sell, we know how to sell our product. Now, there are some retailers like Nowhere Comics, some comic shops in Baltimore, that really, they actually get on the phone with me and they come and see me in person, and I give them the pitch and tell them how to sell my stuff. And then they phone me, they're like, we sell your stuff as easy, or if not easier than some of the hottest Marvel titles, because
we're kind of glossing over the fact that these are very well written stories that have a very, very intricate world building aspect to them. Like, I've seen several articles out recently comparing even your deal to HBO as, oh, this could be the next Game of Thrones. And I was like, at first I was taken aback, and then I thought about it. I'm like, they're not wrong, because you've got Dusu, even though that takes place in her past, it's sort of the African arm of the storyline. And I know Arathun is Nordic, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Back then when you were first trying to sell, like, hey, I'm going to basically bet the farm on this black female character and her world. Now, post Black Panther, you know, post all of the things that happened in 2018, is it easier to sell her now? Is it? I just keep thinking of that cover of Niobe, she is death with her arms crossed, and it looks like the Wakanda salute, but it came out first.
It's so funny. Yeah, a lot of people are like, oh, I see you biting Black Panther. I'm like, yeah, no, we did that a year ago. But yeah, but thanks. But then it's very Egyptian, it's very Wonder Woman, it's very Wolverine. It's, you know, it's a very comic-y thing. You know, it's funny, just to touch on that, when we did Niobe Shear's Life, it's in the same pose, but her hands are open and her thumbs are interlocked. It's the sign of the goddess that she's opening herself to receive the spirit and her faith. And then when we did Niobe Shear's Death, she felt failed by her faith and her own, and that she couldn't save the dude she loves and so on. So she closes herself off and closes her fist. So she's ready to put in the work in a more a fighting kind of aggressive martial kind of way. So there was a real meaning behind it. It wasn't just like, ah, it's a cool pose. Because so everything we pretty much do has a lot of symbolism and meaning and depth for a reader to find and find on their own, you know. But to your question is, you know, before Black Panther at conventions, just based on how we sold and the kind of stories and the kind of art, we sold at conventions, I would say, just, and with the Mandler, of course, her popularity, we sold just as well. But because we've been doing the conventions for so long and for so many, we've built up a really solid fan base. And, you know, maybe Black Panther helped a little bit. Where it's obviously helped is in, you know, TV and movie deals and all those types of stuff. And maybe retailers going, oh, you know what, let me take a chance. Because it has its own unique voice. They go, it just always comes back to the story.
Absolutely. And I wanna ask you about some of that retail and the in the HBO deal. But I want to take a quick break.
Now, most of you know how insanely busy I am, and I have so much to read for my column, interviews, and reviews that I sometimes miss out on really great stories or books that friends recommend me. That's where Audible comes in. In addition to listening to podcasts, I also listen to Audible.com for a lot of really great books out right now. If you're interested in starting your free Audible trial, go to audibletrial.com/theblurredgirl for a free trial and start listening right away. And what's great is many books have full productions behind them, like scripted podcasts these days. For instance, I know Good Omens by Neil Gaiman and Terry Pratchett is coming to the BBC soon, and I read it years ago, but I wanted a little refresher. Well, it turns out there's a dramatic audiobook reading starring Mark Heap and Peter Serafinowicz. He's the guy who played Garthon Saul in Guardians of the Galaxy, and they are hysterical. Check out the book yourself by starting your very own free trial by going to audibletrial.com/theblurredgirl. That's audibletrial.com/theblurredgirl. T-H-E-B-L-E-R-D-G-U-R-L. Now, back to the show.
I know for a fact that other people have been trying to get you to turn at least Niobe into a movie or a show before this. Why did you wait for HBO? What was about this deal that was different?
Look, anytime anyone has any interest in your work, it's always appreciated. But I also am very protective of her, of Niobe. I get sometimes a little leery that people just wanted to get Niobe because it was Black History Month and it was time to like pretend that they cared.
I know that feeling. Every February and March I get work because Black History Month and then Women's History Month.
right. That's great, but my whole thing was this. I'm not creating something because it's timely. I didn't do this because it's timely. This is 30 years of my life's work. I want to create something timeless. This isn't a flash in the pan thing. I didn't do this because Black Panther was coming out. I didn't do this because Game of Thrones was on the air. I didn't do this because Wonder Woman was coming out. I was doing this because this is the story I wanted to tell. And the other thing that I was very, very strict about was I have a brand that people respect and enjoy and embrace. So if I did the wrong deal, and I came very close at one point, if I did the wrong deal and it was turned into something that I was not proud of, I would be devastated for the rest of my life. And on top of that, fans that would have seen it, that hadn't heard of the comics, they would have seen it and gone like, oh, then I saw that shit. That was crap. And they would have just walked past my booth. I literally couldn't risk my brand.
Yeah, you don't want it to end up like Airbender. You want it to...
Right. For folks that don't know the cartoon, if they've only seen something they don't enjoy, no matter what it is...
Exactly.
Their first interpretation of... Their first, you know... That's why I'm always like, you know, really sketchy with certain movies with bad representation. If people don't do the research, you know, they might watch a movie and think, you know, Egyptian gods are white.
Right.
Because they don't know any better.
And the same thing with Airbender. If anybody hadn't seen the Airbender Nickelodeon Avatar Last Airbender, and all they saw was the live action movie, they wouldn't understand it either.
A lot of times for me, when I create, I draw more inspiration. I feel like I'm sounding like a really obnoxious dude, but anyway, it's just the reality is I draw more inspiration from music and old cinema, but mainly music. What makes me tick, right?
Yeah, but you've actually said that before. You told me that you're a big Blue Note fan and Tashin.
Yeah, Blue Note. Pat, you know, that's how I model it. You know, it's again really obnoxious, but I was like, okay, if I'm going to build, how I built my record label is how I built Stranger Comics. Is I'm not in this business of quick throw something out, see if I can sell it, see if it becomes a TV show, see if it can be this, see if someone, you know, I can make a quick buck. You know, if I want to do something to make a quick buck, I shouldn't be in comics, right? Right, exactly. It's just got to be as good as it can be, in the same way that when I looked at, funny enough, HBO and Tashin and Blue Note, when you picked up a Blue Note record, you just knew it was Blue Note. You didn't need to look at the label. It's extremely important to me, you know, to be perfectly honest, to present comics with people of color, represent folks of color in comics and graphic novels in a way that feels like $1 million. Like, I'm going to put that on my coffee table.
Yes.
This is,
yeah,
this is me. This is my shit.
Quality is very important, because I think, and that's one of the things that I have to regularly, for lack of a better phrase, beat people over the head with when I say, you know, I write about indie comics or I'm very much into indie comics. People are like, oh, well, you know, I haven't seen anything that was really good, you know, because they think that the quality has to be bad or the writing has to be bad. Circling back around to HBO a little bit, what is it that you get to do? Because you said you didn't want anybody to telling you the story differently. So do you get to executive produce?
Yeah, no, I got very fortunate. I partnered with a lady named Mimi Detrani.
Mm-hmm.
And she, to start with, it's funny, I'd met her years before because she was a Mandler's manager.
Oh, wow.
And then she came back into my life about a year ago. And we became good friends, just super supportive of the project. And then towards the end of last year, she became an executive in the company. And introduced me to HBO at the end of last year. And,
oh, wow. So she's at HBO now.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
So she introduced me to the incredible agents and attorneys. And so I tip my hat to Mimi, massively for her belief in me and Niobe and the team to want to take me to these incredible folks. The executives at HBO, it clicked.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lady I met at Netflix, and they clicked there too. She was wonderful. But with the HBO guys, I didn't have to prove myself that I needed to be an executive producer or a writer on the show. They wanted me. It was less of a, let me do a pitch,
mm-hmm.
you know. I was embraced. So
that's wonderful. And so you're so lucky.
I tip my hat to those guys. I tip my hat to the HBO guys to have that openness to me as a creator and to see what I was bringing to the table, I guess, you know.
Will Amandla star in the first as Niobe in this? Has any of those discussions happened yet?
Not really, because when we did Niobe, Amandla was 15.
Yeah, she's
right?
not 15
and she's
anymore.
20 now. right. So I think those conversations are gonna come, and I'm looking forward to them. I love Amandla to death, so we'll see. But I think more than likely we'll start with The Untamed, because it's got great context for the world and the introduction of some of our main characters, and it's just a different kind of way to introduce fantasy, and it's definitely worked for our graphic novels and so on. But for folks that have read The Untamed, there's going to be a lot of surprises that obviously I couldn't put in the graphic novels, but I can put in the show. And folks are going to be in for a real treat. I can tell you that. It's fantastic. And Niobe in The Untamed, unless we shift it, she is 13. So,
yeah. So she has to. She definitely has to be young.
Yeah.
But maybe you can find an actor like they did with the Harry Potter characters, where you can find a young actress that can play all the roles, and, you know, because we're talking about a universe, right? Because HBO picked up Asunder, the universe, not just one book.
Yeah. Exactly. And that would be, and I think that would be a lot of fun for folks and fans to find themselves within, you know, fresh faces. I mean, that's what HBO does. So well, as they put, even when they get big megastars sharper objects and Big Little Lies and whatever, and then to Game of Thrones, the star of the show always feels like the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they do that so elegantly and so brilliantly, and the star of the show is the story and the characters. And even when you have big stars, you're just immersed in in those storylines.
Well, who was your dream cast? If you had unlimited budget and HBO said, we'll get anybody you want.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I know you have a list. I don't know.
It's been all over the place. You know, I think set my mind on is the spirit of the actor has to be conveyed. The spirit of the character has to be conveyed by the actor. And Niobe definitely has to be a black girl. She has to have dreadlocks. It has to feel, everything has to be authentic. It's not, it can't be anything less than. I don't know. I'm just looking forward to that journey to find her. And as far as the stranger, you know, I like Mahershala Ali to Vigo, to Oscar Isaac, to, you know, guys that have the right balance of can kill you with their eyes, but also
that's interesting,
have vulnerability.
Because you just mentioned three different men for the same role that are three different ethnicities. And it's funny to me because in this day and age when people say, oh, it's colorblind casting, they don't really mean it. But I feel like you really do. This is your goal.
Without question. Now, specifically, I mean, here's sometimes the rub with that stuff, right? Is because when you have a character who's, let's say, black or brown or mixed or white, they're going to have their own unique experiences, the way they walk, dance, the nuances of upbringing, neighborhoods, faith, family, day to day. And sometimes I'm a little bit concerned where it's like, oh, okay, we'll slot the black guy in here.
Exactly.
Well, that doesn't even make sense. Like, then the writing for those characters can at times feel like it's hollow or cosmetic. And then they're not given opportunities to breathe as men or as women. You know, there is a certain actors that just, Mads Mikkelsen, I think is just,
oh, he's phenomenal.
He's that dude.
But see, I'm thinking, Arathun for him.
Yeah, no, he's great for Arathun. He's great. But you know, Mads Mikkelsen, and I don't know if you ever saw the movie Valhalla Rising.
Oh, yeah,
Yeah. It's just like when you see him, it's like, oh, yeah, that's a dude you don't want to mess with. Yet there are those extra layers upon layers within behind those eyes, and that's
what you're looking for. Yeah,
you know,
now,
that doesn't happen too much.
It does not. Now, have you the ink is just barely dry, right? So you're not shooting starting next week. What is your projected date that we're gonna maybe see our premiere episode?
No clue. I wouldn't even hazard a guess. For me, hopefully, you know, hopefully soon. I'm thankful to have found a home for The World of Asunder that seems to respect the vision for what we do and love it and embrace it. There are some horror stories I'm not allowed to tell you, so
no.
I'll just say
I believe you.
After the horror stories, it is a bit of a surreal moment.
Yeah, no, and I'm very excited for you, and I'm looking forward to it as well. And I can only hope that everything happens for a reason. So maybe you couldn't appreciate how amazing this is if you hadn't gone through the bad stuff.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's perfect. Yeah.
Now, I have two more. I saw something online that said that now you still own Stranger Comics, right? It's not like HBO owns the comics.
No, yeah, I don't. Yeah, I saw that circulating as well. I'm like, that's hilarious. No.
And I thought it was hilarious too, because I was like, Sebastian would not be giving up his baby like that.
Yeah, no, I don't know why that was circulated. No, I own Stranger Comics, and the deal is for The World of Asunder.
And what's going to happen to the comics while you're working on the show? Like, are you taking all of the trades to a certain extent, and that's going to be the world that exists for HBO, and then create something else on the comic side? Or are you just going to keep kicking the comics out too, because there's more stories?
Oh yeah, we'll still keep kicking comics out. Absolutely. It's funny, I just finished writing the fourth issue of Niobe She Is Death yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then we'll move on to Niobe She Is Spirit. So that's in the works, and I just solidified writing third volume of The Untamed. We're going to start production of that in early summer. And Assessor, Niobe's nemesis, the vampire. We just finished the first issue of that, and with my editor-in-chief, I brought him on. He's writing it with me, and the artist Kanan is doing amazing. Kanan Blonde, just a great bunch of guys putting out great stuff. And then we'll probably do one other thing, and then look at some other stuff in the kid space as well. I have a book which I'm very behind on, but it's going to be coming out called Silent Night. Oh, and we did close a wonderful deal with Paizo, so we are going to be coming out. It's been in the works for 2 years now, and it should be ready, I've been told, for at least a download at the end of this month for a Niobe Pathfinder game. So for
Oh,
guys that
the
play,
game is coming. Okay,
well,
great.
we are doing a deal with sword makers of Kalamazoo to do the live action. Sure, I probably butcher the pronunciation, to do live action role playing swords of Niobe. We closed a deal with them. The Lord of the Rings jewelers, the Badali jewelry, as you know,
Yes, I have some of the
jewelry
Dali
stuff.
jewelry, yes.
Yeah, and we got some other stuff. Yeah, so it's a great place to be for Stranger Comics. It really is.
It is. It's fantastic, and to just see your growth. And I remember what it was when you only had like one or two comics, and to see this, it's just
Yeah.
you're truly a success story. But honestly, you come by it honestly though. Every time I've spoken to you, you've been very, very clear about what your mission is, what your focus is, and where you were going with the company, and you've never doubted the story, and you've never, you've trusted the story. And I think that's also why you have such a great team, because they get that from you. So from the outside looking in,
Thank
if
you.
you're faking it, you're doing a really good job, because you look like you know what you're doing.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. The other thing I tell folks is, like, we work 7 days a week. I jump on social media, I do my posts, I check out some few folks, I try and support. If friends have Kickstarters, I give them some support, and then I'm outro. I don't get caught up in that stuff because
No, keep your head down. That's how you get, that's how you're
yeah, I got
successful.
to nose to the grind.
Now, you just mentioned social media. Tell everybody where on the 2 times a week you're on social media. I know you're on more than that, but where can everybody find you?
Thanks, darling. Yeah, you can find us at Stranger Comics on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Just do the at sign at Stranger Comics, and our website is strangercomics.com. And you'll probably find us at a convention coming soon. We're at LA Festival of Book. Then we'll be doing, we were at Phoenix, I think it's called Fan Fusion Fest, now, and Denver Comic Con. And
Will you be in San Diego?
what else? I mean, obviously, we're at Baltimore, Rose City, San Diego. Yeah, doy. Yeah, so we'll be in San Diego, New York. Yeah, we'll be in a few places. We're still waiting to hear back if we get into Dragon Con, which I always thought was funny. We keep asking to get into Dragon Con. We're like, hey, we got dragons.
Right,
We got comics. So
Thank you.
thank you.
Thank you so much for talking to me again. I'm just so much I just really excited about the growth and all of these stories. And for people who don't know, there's like, even though we're talking about HBO, you've got like a good, what, 8, 10 TPBs that are out. There's a
Yeah.
lot for people to read.
Yeah.
There's a lot for people to catch up on. So please go to your local comic book shop and support. And thank you for talking to me.
Yeah, of course, of course. And you're my first interview, darling. So,
Yay!
so you're the first interview since the announcement.
Oh, I can't wait to say that.
Thanks for having me. You rock. I appreciate it so much.
Isn't Sebastian amazing? Check out everything he's working on at strangercomics.com and follow him on social media at Stranger Comics, so you'll be one of the first to hear about when the HBO show drops. Thanks for listening, and please don't forget to comment and subscribe wherever you're listening to this. Sign up for the newsletter at theblurredgirl.com and check out my podcast sponsor, Audible, at audibletrial.com/theblurredgirl. See you next time.